You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live, for WFHB, this is Carolyn Vandewiel.
And I'm Joe Crawford. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, April 6th, 2017. We're in the seventh day of our spring fund drive, and today is your last chance to pledge in support of the Daily Local News. Call 812-323-1200 now to support volunteer-powered independent journalism, or visit WFHB.org to make a safe and secure donation online.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks about the use of chemical weapons in Syria. But first, these local headlines.
Students, faculty, and staff at Indiana University have signed an open letter denouncing a social scientist who is slated to speak on campus next week. The speaker, Charles Murray, is described by the Southern Poverty Law Center as a white nationalist who uses, quote, racist pseudoscience and misleading statistics to argue that social inequality is caused by the genetic inferiority of the Black and Latino communities, women, and the poor, unquote. Murray is scheduled to speak on Tuesday, April 11th at Franklin Hall. The event was announced yesterday. As of this afternoon, 71 people had signed an open letter calling the event highly irresponsible and, quote, detrimental to the university community, unquote. Rafael Kachaturian, a graduate student in the IU Political Science Department, is one of the authors of that letter.
His arguments have been used to advance justifications for the racial superiority of certain social groups and justifications for cutting, let's say, government aid to particular groups because they are seen as not being worthy of it, or it's essentially not being able to help them in any way.
Murray has drawn particularly serious criticism for his views on differences between gender and racial groups. In 2005, he published an article titled Where Are the Female Einsteins?, in which he stated, quote, no woman has been a significant original thinker in any of the world's great philosophical traditions, unquote. Murray made national news last month when his speech at Middlebury College was effectively shut down by protesters. That incident ended in violence after a small group of protesters confronted Murray and some members of the Middlebury staff. Kachaturian says he is not advocating for Murray's IU speech to be interrupted, nor is he necessarily arguing organizers should cancel the event.
The purpose of my letter really was not to impose any form of censorship upon the kinds of events that are being organized, you know, on campus or in town. What I did want to point out first and foremost was really the problematic character of a lot of Murray's work, which was not really being put forward, I think, very openly within the initial advertisement that was being circulated around the university.
A flyer for the event describes Murray as a political scientist, author, and libertarian. The flyer does not mention recent controversy, though it does note that Murray's 1994 book, The Bell Curve, quote, sparked heated controversy for its analysis of the role of IQ in shaping America's class structure, unquote. The speech is sponsored by a student group, the American Enterprise Institute Executive Council at IU, as well as the university's Tocqueville program. The director of the Tocqueville program, Oriellen Criutu, says Murray's speech is part of the program's efforts at fostering an understanding of what he calls the Trump phenomenon.
We live in a society in which we take the free speech seriously. I do not think that we should deny the right to speak to Mr. Murray on campus. What I personally am interested in understanding the Trump phenomenon. We live in bubbles. We need to understand how other people think.
Criutu says the Indiana University Police Department has been involved in arranging certain details of the event, including the selection of Franklin Hall as a venue. A flyer states that all attendees must present a valid university ID. Kariutu says he does not yet know if there will be a question and answer portion of the event. Khachaturian, who wrote the opposition letter with political science graduate student Mike Govanda, says he plans to present the document to event organizers on Monday, the day before the speech, which is scheduled to begin at 6 p.m. on Tuesday.
A group of Indiana University students marched through campus and into Provost Lauren Rebell's office yesterday to demand the university add a social justice education requirement for all students, hire more faculty and staff of color, and increase enrollment of Pell Grant recipients. The march, organized by Students Against State Violence, was part of an event titled Decolonize IU. The demands are similar to a resolution on diversity passed last year by the Bloomington Faculty Council. Inside the provost's office, students read aloud from a demand letter.
The current education requirements do not entail a significant engagement with issues of race, gender, and class by most IU students, resulting in a student body that is unequipped to understand the real problems our society faces. It is unacceptable that students should be able to go through 4 years of education at Indiana University without ever having to learn about current and historical forms of oppression.
The students went on to demand a social justice education requirement, which they said would not require students to take additional classes. Instead, they said one of a student's already required courses would be required to fit within the social justice category. The demand letter goes on to state that IU enrolls too few Pell Grant recipients.
Currently, IU Bloomington only enrolls Pell Grant recipients at a rate of 16%, almost half of the 30% goal put forth by the BFC resolution. Pell Grant recipients are from low-income households, disproportionately people of color. An increase in the enrollment rate of Pell Grant recipients would prove IU's commitment to underserved and marginalized students. However, because these students have fewer resources and educational opportunities, they often score lower on the economically biased standardized tests required for college admissions, regardless of their intelligence or potential. Therefore, IU has an incentive not to enroll Pell Grant recipients.
The letter from Students Against Violence goes on to describe the demands as minimal and states their ultimate objective is a, quote, tuition-free, unpoliced, fully accessible institution, unquote.
The Indiana Senate has approved a bill allowing government agencies to charge $20 per hour for public records requests that take more than 2 hours to complete. Supporters of the bill say that public records requests can take an excessive amount of government workers' time. Opponents, like investigative journalist and now IU professor Jerry Lanoska, disagree with charging for requests under open government laws.
It's a bad idea. It puts up another barrier to public access to records that, as you say, have already been bought and paid for by the public.
Lanoska went on to add that bad faith of some public officials to that list.
There are officials who act in bad faith and simply don't want to provide records when they're requested, and this gives them some ammunition to do so.
The bill passed the Senate on a 44-3 vote on Wednesday. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Support for WFHB comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Well, today is day 7 of WFHB's Spring Fund Drive. This is your last chance to support WFHB's daily local news by calling 812-323-1200 and making your pledge of support. You know, Carolyn, we have about a couple $100 goal for today's show, today's episode of the Daily Local News, which it really isn't too much. I think we could certainly get a few folks on the line and hit that. I'd love to hit that before we even get halfway through the show. Give us a call right now at 812-323-1200. We do have folks out there waiting to take your calls. I believe all the lines are open. You know, of course, Carolyn, as you know well, you've been involved with the station a long time, but also you've been involved with the news for a while. Doing local news is just more expensive. It takes more resources than doing, you know, than doing prepackaged or syndicated programs.
If we just had to take something off the web and plug it into the radio, we could do that, but that wouldn't give us the local news that we get. We would just be getting something that's prepackaged and not necessarily relevant to our situation here in Bloomington. And so we need equipment. We need recorders. We need volunteers to be able to go out, get the stories. We've got to have computers to put things together, do our sound clips. All of these things cost money. And
I can assure you we're not going out and buying the most expensive pieces of equipment.
We are not. But we're not going low-end. It's going to fall apart next week either.
No,
we
sure
do take your money and put it to the best use that we possibly can here at WFHB. Plus, we do have to pay for some of our syndicated news programs as well. And we need your help. 812-323-1200. If you are not near a phone or you're on your computer right now, you can go to WFHB.org. Click on the red donate button. It only takes a few minutes, but this show has garnered so many awards and so many kudos from around the country that it really makes a difference, and it's something special to Bloomington.
You know, on that note, I will add, Carolyn, that we've actually just received word that for the fourth year in a row, the Daily Local News is going to receive an award for being one of the best newscasts in the state of Indiana. I will say that actually for the past, I believe it's 3 years in a row, we got top honors there. This show that you're listening to was awarded best newscast in the state. What we know right now is that we will get some kind of award for being among the best newscasts. We'll find out in a couple weeks if the Indiana Society of Professional Journalists deems us number one or not. But it is something special that WFHB has been able to foster here. Community-run, volunteer-driven news is winning professional journalism awards year in and year out. So I do want to thank all of you who've supported us over the years. Thank you. And thank you to those of you who are about to call 812-323-1200 to support this important program. We do need to return now to your daily headlines. The Bloomington City Council continues to hear from Monroe County residents about annexation. Van Buren Township Trustee Rita Barrow told the City Council last night that an annexation meeting the city's planning for May 31st is inconvenient for some county residents.
I want to make you guys aware that I have had many of the residents coming in, and not just from Van Buren, from other areas, and they are very upset that you are putting this on a Wednesday at noon. They cannot get off work in order to come in and make their public speaks and ask questions of you.
Monroe County resident Joel Deutsch went so far as to call the city's choice to schedule a weekday midday meeting a, quote, cowardly strategy. Council President Susan Sandberg countered that the May 31st meeting, which is still in the planning stages, is actually being arranged for optimum public comment.
It will start at noon with respect for the fact that we are anticipating a very large turnout. That meeting will conclude very late that evening to accommodate all the schedules of all the people from the public who wish to attend. So make no mistake, the City of Bloomington is mindful that not everyone can come at noon. And so the meeting will be structured in a way to accommodate everyone and their work schedules on May 31st. It is also being held in a larger forum. I'm not sure if it is Bloomington South or Bloomington North, but I know arrangements have been made for it to occur in a gymnasium, again, to accommodate the people that we anticipate.
Van Buren Township Trustee Rita Barrow is organizing her own annexation information session later this month and invited the City Council to attend. WFHB spoke with Barrow today. She said she's still trying to nail down a location and date for that meeting. In the meantime, Barrow is looking for volunteers to help circulate a petition against the proposed annexation among residents of Van Buren Township.
The petition is just to say we are not in favor of being annexed, and this is not a legal document. It is just a petition saying we're not in favor of it. We're not forcing anyone to sign this. It is strictly up to the individual homeowner whether he or she wants to sign it. But the more we can get, the more likely we are to be able to express to the City Council our concerns.
We'll have more on the Van Buren Township meeting as it develops.
A request for a conditional use permit for a home-based massage business saw unusually intense scrutiny last night in the meeting of the Monroe County Board of Zoning Appeals. Homeowner Donna Dillard and her brother-in-law sought approval to use one room of Dillard's home on South Hickory Leaf Drive for a massage therapy business for special needs clients. Dillard's brother-in-law, Moises, is a massage therapist. Dillard herself has a disabled son. County Planner Jacqueline Nestor said planning staff recommended approval of the conditional use request with a few conditions.
The approval of the conditional use request for, that should say, home occupation to Chapter 813 based on findings of fact and subject to the following conditions: to create better visibility from the driveway, petitioner should move two of the bushes near the front property line, and customers may only park in the private driveway. In addition, the petitioner submitted the commitment stating the following: no more than 20 customers per week with hours of operation running from 4 to 9 p.m. Monday through Friday.
A letter submitted just before the meeting from one of Dillard's neighbors lodged a variety of complaints against her, ranging from the number of cars parked in her driveway to burning wood in a fire pit, and questioned whether her home was really handicap accessible. The neighbor complained the deed to the house listed multiple owners. During public comment, five more neighbors continued the barrage of complaints. Neighbor Nora Whaley said that when she purchased her home in 1964, she was assured it was a quiet neighborhood and complained that Dillard had noisy parties. Longtime resident Martha Cornell was one of four residents who said existing traffic in the neighborhood is dangerous enough.
There's no place to park. They're wanting to do their business from 4 to 9 when children get out of school. There's going to be no place for the senior citizens to walk and for us to take our children that can't hear, that don't have any place to go or to play after they've gotten out of school or to walk safely back to, even with us, back to our homes. People will be flying over the hills. I live on the Leonard Springs end, where they live on the Hickory Leaf end. People fly over the top of the hill and smack us when we're backing out of our driveway because they can't see us because they're not paying attention. We don't need that.
Cornell said in the last 7 years, her family has been involved in 9 accidents due to speeding traffic. Dillard's neighbor Thomas Osborne upped the neighborhood accident count to 12. He also asserted the home didn't meet ADA code, the massage room had wiring that didn't meet code, and that Dillard's family burned trash illegally. For her part, Dillard acknowledged early in the meeting that her home saw a lot of activity from visiting family members as well as caseworkers and caretakers for her disabled child. Still, Dillard maintains her driveway is large enough to accommodate the activity without spilling into the road or other driveways. Dillard said the massage business is not meant to be disruptive to the neighborhood.
I don't want to make the neighborhood a business. We just want to give back in a way that we can to the special need community that they can't get what they want or what they really need. We want to work with our neighbors. We don't want to fight, but they complain about it. They complain that there's too many cars in my driveway. They even had, I don't know who comes out there, checked to make sure all my license plates were, you know, valid, not like a junkyard thing. And they wasn't, but there is always going to be cars in my house. People can come and check. I always had an open door policy. If those neighbors, any of them, want to come and knock on the door and check, they're welcome to.
County resident Thomas Westgard voiced his support for the home massage business.
You know, special needs are damned inconvenient. They're damned inconvenient for neighbors, and they're really, really inconvenient for the person who has them. So the idea that someone would complain that there are too many cars coming to care for a person who is permanently and totally disabled is a little hard to listen to. So I wanted to speak up about that.
Board member Jerry Pittsford said the board couldn't make decisions based on whether people are good neighbors, but only based on the guidance given in county ordinance. The motion to grant the conditional use request failed 3-2, with Kevin Roebling, Scott Wells, and Michael McNeil voting against. Wells said a home-based massage business was just not the right fit for an older neighborhood.
Indiana University is planning to invest up to $500,000 to boost childcare services. Renovations of storage rooms at the campus Children's Center are expected to decrease the total of 200 names on waiting lists, according to the Herald Times. That's something that IU student and mother of three, Rachel Jackson, has wanted for a long time. Jackson waited for more than a year to be offered childcare.
Freshman year when I got down here, I needed childcare. So when I went there, they said there's a wait list. So I said, okay. So then sophomore year, they ended up calling me back. And when I went to, like, fill, like, paperwork out and things like that, the prices for childcare are, like super high, and we had no idea.
Now being able to afford the childcare a couple of years later, Jackson is back on the wait list. Officials say construction will start this summer with a target completion of January 2018. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Support for WFHB also comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and mobile device user in mind. Located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317-567-1197.
It's Spring Pledge Drive at WFHB. Call us now at 812-323-1200 to support volunteer-powered community journalism.
That's right, Carolyn. We have just a few more moments for folks to call and support this important program that you're hearing. If you've been listening to the show, you know that we have been reporting on a wide variety of issues affecting both the county, the city, the university. The theme here, of course, it's local news, and that's not unfortunately that's kind of a rare breed a lot of times, especially with half-hour local volunteer-run news programs. We are it. So if you like what you hear, give us a call at 812-323-1200. You know, Carolyn, we have a low barrier model here at WFHB. And that is essentially part of our commitment to diversity. It kind of guarantees that we're able to cover this wide variety of subjects.
It certainly does. And I want to put in a plug also for Cats Week, because those of us who can't spend all those hours watching local meetings get a chance to get a summary of those local meetings by watching Cats Week on Cats TV. And I know many people who find that invaluable.
And so that's a lot of the program that we're also presenting to you here during the Daily Local News as well. We have this partnership where we're able to kind of use the strengths of both CATS and WFHB, something that really is unique to WFHB Community Radio and Community Access Television Services.
And it's all local. It's all for the community. And right now we need the community to step up for just a minute. Go to the phone, 812-323-1200. Go to our website at wfhb.org. Pledge your support to keep this great show on the air.
Let's continue the Daily Local News now with our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, should the red line in the sand, as drawn during the previous administration, finally be enforced? In August 2012, towards the end of his first term in office, President Obama drew a red line in the sand, indicating that if Assad used chemical weapons, it would warrant U.S. military action. In August 2013, a year later, Syrian military attacked rebel-controlled areas of the Damascus suburbs with chemical weapons. When asked for authorization by then-President Obama, Congress and the American people proved strongly opposed to the use of force, and no military action was taken. Voices in the Street asked your friends and neighbors in 2013 whether the use of chemical weapons would warrant military intervention. As you listened to their opinions, you may ask yourself whether things have changed since 2013.
I think sometimes war is a necessary evil. I don't know enough about the situation to really give an honest answer, but I know that sometimes war is necessary.
I don't think it's any of the U.S.'s business to be messing around in Syria.
I would say, yeah, diplomatically, but I wouldn't want to use force because I just don't think we should get involved in Syria. It's their civil war, their war, not ours.
I think the only time we should have actually gotten involved
militarily would have been in the very beginning stages, because then we would have been able to know who we were funding and who, you know, who we were actually helping. Now, so many influences in Al-Qaeda and things like that, you know, you can get so many different rebels that are there and you don't know really who you're helping.
Only use force if we can't solve it diplomatically at this point. If we can't get the chemical weapons out of there, actually get them out, then I think we may have to do something.
I think we need to do something about it, because I don't think it's acceptable what's going on.
I don't think that they should be involved, because we just didn't really have anything to do with it. And I don't think that they should go in there with force, because that's putting all the Americans at risk.
I support war. That's the only reason why. Because it's good for a lot of things, like the economy and stuff. I have a different viewpoint than almost anybody else would have, because I was in the Army and I love being deployed. So I would sign back up for the Army if we went back to war.
Well, I would say that if they continue using chemical weapons, then we have to go in, or else international norms don't actually mean anything, and treaties that we want to be held up are completely meaningless because we don't actually enforce them.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB, supported by Smithville Fiber, a local provider of high-speed internet, TV, voice, and security services. Today's headlines were written by Simon Williams and Joe Crawford, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services.
Voices in the Street was produced by Barbara Von Bravosky. Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. For WFHB, this is Joe Crawford.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program. Take a minute and go to 812-323-1200 and support the Daily Local News.
Stay tuned now for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.